You know, not everything always works out the way we would like it to work out. We don't always have thorough comfort in our lives as Christians, but we do have hope. We do have hope. Nice four-letter word, and I want to talk about that today, the hope that we have. What is hope? Well, the dictionary defines it as the feeling that what is desired is also possible. We all desire God's kingdom. We all desire freedom from pain and anxiety, not only for ourselves, but for others in the church and for others, for the world in general. The Greek word that's used for hope in the New Testament means joyful and confident expectation of eternal salvation. We have that. Hopefully we're confident in that. I know we do have our doubts from time to time, and we have our worries and our anxieties, but we do have that hope, and that is what undoubtedly motivates us more than anything else in our lives. And causes us to wear that badge that we heard about, hopefully, in the sermonette. I'd like to, first of all, look at the stepping stones for hope. There are some stepping stones to hope described in one part of the Bible in Romans 5, beginning in verse 3. Romans 5, verse 3. Romans 5, I don't know if my fingers are dry or if these pages are getting slicker, but it takes me a little longer. Maybe it's my advanced age to get to some of these scriptures. But Romans 5, verse 3, and not only so, but we glory in tribulation. Really? Well, we should. We all have tribulations. We all have problems of one kind or another. And hopefully they don't floor us. Hopefully they do, are something we can take advantage of, actually, because tribulation works patience. You know, through tribulation, we have patience, and patience experience. You know, as we experience tribulation, we are patient about it, we live through it, we look back on that experience, and we say, you know, I came through that. As usually a lot of macho men say, whatever don't kill you makes you a better person. And hopefully that's true, particularly in our case. And experience hope. So we have those four steps. You know, tribulation, patience, experience, and hope, which is the destination that we're all looking for. So I'd like to look at each of those steps in Scripture and sort of evaluate them, and maybe that'll help us to, you know, I'm big on structure and mechanics, to have more hope and to take those steps toward having perfect spiritual hope. And the first is tribulation. The Greek word there means a pressing together or pressure. You ever feel like you're under pressure? You ever feel like life has a big vice on your head? I mean, my dad used to have this big old vice in his workshop, and I don't know what happened to it. We were up there last summer trying to sort through some things that we would like, my brother and I, in the house where we grew up, and there was a vice there, but it wasn't this big, huge vice that he had. You know, seems you could put anything in there and it would be stable and solid, but you'd really have to crank it up and really put it under pressure so it wouldn't move. Pressure, that's what tribulation is, and we all feel that today, I think, to some degree or another, as we deal with life at work, at school, in our families, in our communities. And we have that pressure that every once in a while comes upon us. We wonder, where am I going to go from here? You know, this week I had a little pressure. Well, I had a cold. And it came upon me when I was working at the cave on Monday. And all of a sudden I realized the back of my throat was really dry. My wife has had this, so she had it for over a week. And I thought, I hope I'm not getting what she's got, because that's going to floor me for about a week. And I was driving home, and you shouldn't do this while you're driving, but my cell phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was my boss from my other job, for which I get up. I start working at 3:30 in the morning. He said, oh, by the way, tomorrow night I need you to do some stuff up until about 10 o'clock. It was election night, and he has nobody else to do it, so I said, well, I guess I'll do it. And it involved what he was mainly concerned with. It involved a short interview on a nationally syndicated radio show, which he wanted us represented on, and somehow he thought I'd be a good representative talking about the election. Turns out the guy who was interviewing me, who's also from Missouri, lives in Washington, D.C. now, knew more about the situation here than I did. But he was kind and gentle and kind of led me along. But that kept me up till, I think, after 10 o'clock at night. That isn't very comfortable. I felt under pressure. I got to go to bed. I got to get up at 3:30 and, you know, and start work at 3:30. I start work at home. And pressure, and we all have that. That's probably not the worst pressure that, if we were to compare notes in here, that any of us have had this week. And then the next day, I think it was Robert called me and presented me with his problem, and I took him to the emergency room, and I had some work to do, and I said, Robert, I'm going to leave you here. I'm going to see that you get checked in, and then I've got to go home. It wasn't that far, and do some work, and then you call me when you get ready to be discharged or when you're admitted. Just let me know what's happening, and when you're discharged, I'll see that you get home. Knowing that that might be late in the night, you know, like 8 o'clock, I called Joan out, and she said, well, I'll do it. And then my wife, who kind of has a soft spot for Robert, said, well, I'll do it. So actually, when he called, I just turned to my wife and said, take him home. So she took him home, and hopefully he's recovering. He, like I say, he still has a lot of pain. But we all have those pressures. We all have those pressures. If it's not on the job, it might be at school. It might be within our own family we have pressures and problems. And again, and within our community, we have pressures and problems. Turn to 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12. And again, we're talking about tribulation. 2 Timothy 3, 12. Yea, all that live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer prosecution, or persecution, actually. Doesn't that make you feel good? What a great promise. If you follow Christ, you're going to have problems. And, of course, even people who don't follow Christ, of course, have problems. Some have problems that are much worse than what we have, mainly because of sin, perhaps. But even as Christians, we're going to have problems. We're going to have persecution. Believe it or not, we're going to have people that don't like us. I don't like that. I like being popular. I like people to like me. But, you know, sometimes they think we're a little weird. Sometimes our Christianity causes problems with other people. Again, at work, at home, in our families, in our schools or wherever, even in our community, we have problems. So as Christians, yep, that's part of the proposition that we will have tribulation. We will have problems. Matthew 10 and verse 38. Matthew 10, beginning in verse 38. And he that taketh not his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. We need to carry a cross. We need to be willing to be a sacrifice, as Jesus Christ was. In verse 39, he that finds his life shall lose it. Are you out for yourself? Are you looking out for number one? Are you trying to advance yourself? Well, that's a surefire recipe for disaster. And he that loses his life for my sake shall find it. You know, those of us who sacrifice our lives, and there's a lot of ways of sacrificing your life, for Jesus Christ's sake, shall lose it, or shall find it. As one minister told me one time, we're not here to be saved, although really we are, but he said, in a short sense, we're here to be spent. So are we willing to be spent in our service to Jesus Christ? Are we willing to find our life or by losing it, by being willing to give up? And again, giving our lives. Now, when I say that, you probably think of martyrdom. And that's a way that that happens to some Christians. We can read through history. We can read about martyrdom. We can read about, various things that have happened to Christians. And I think there was a book written, and there's a question asked, why do bad things happen to good people? But they do, even within the church. I don't know how many of you have ever read Fox's Book of Martyrs. I've read portions of it, and it's not real pleasant. It's just talking about some of the martyrdoms people have faced down through the ages. Some are not necessarily church members. Some were, perhaps. But martyrdoms that people, that's one way we sacrifice our lives for Christ. Another is, what is our life made up of? It's made up of stuff. Sometimes we have to give up stuff because we're Christians. Sometimes we give up time. We give up time. That's what our lives are made of. And when we sacrifice our time, we then are serving Christ and giving of ourselves. Because we may be given an hour or two of our time here or there to help someone in the church, or someone who's not in the church, someone who we know needs help. My wife is like that. She, I know we'll be driving along, and some guy will be standing there with a sign, and okay, my inclination sometimes is to say, well, too bad, and go on. She's more inclined to stop. In fact, I've probably told you this before, my daughter and grandson, because of my wife's example, not mine necessarily, carry small bills in their pocket. And so that they don't have to reach into their wallet to help people like that. Well, good for them. But it doesn't seem to be my nature to do that, although it should be. It should be all of our natures. Not that we have to put a price tag on it, but we give of ourselves. And again, we give of our time. We give of our time. Whether that, again, is to a church member that maybe needs some help, and so we take an afternoon and we go help them. We take maybe just a few minutes to help somebody. Or maybe a few days, you don't know. But we all, and I think everybody in here, somehow I get the feeling that if I called you tomorrow and needed something that would take up half your day on Monday or half your available time, I don't think there's anybody in here that wouldn't help. I hope I'm right about that. I hope I'm wrong about calling you Monday. If your phone rings tomorrow or Monday morning, you may not want to answer it. But no, I know most of you would. Most of you would be helpful. I know one time I was at Spokesman's Club, for those of you who are old and remember that. And in the middle of the club where we were meeting, this was before cell phones, the phone rang. And it was my wife, and she mentioned that my daughter's car had broken down, well, initially in, I'm trying to think of the name of the Alley Springs, which is well over 100 miles away. But she'd managed to get it going again, and it finally broke down for good in Mansfield. So here it is late at night, and, 8 o'clock maybe. And, well, I wasn't getting up quite that early back then, but I had to get out of Spokesman's Club, said, guys, I got to go, and just excuse myself, and drove out to Mansfield, picked up my daughters, and then called a mechanic and made sure that their car would be taken care of, which it was in a few days, but that was difficult, you know, leaving her car there, and then coming home, and some of the guys found out about that. Some of the guys in Spokesman's Club, they said, why didn't you get some help from us? We could have gone out there, and we probably could have towed her car back to Springfield so you didn't have to make another trip out there. But that's the way it is in the church. And hopefully we're willing to give of our lives, whether that means martyrdom, whether that means some of our substance, some of the maybe wealth that we have, some of the good life that we enjoy, or maybe it just means giving our time. That's a way to give of your life. And he that loses his life for my sake shall find it. So hopefully we're willing to do that. Back down in Matthew 24 and verse 9. Matthew 24 and verse 9. And they shall deliver you up to be afflicted, shall kill you. You shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Just another thing that we're all looking forward to, right? I'm not necessarily, although I know this is a forerunner to God's kingdom, so in that sense, I'm looking forward to it. But I don't want people to hate me. I don't want people to persecute me, but it's going to happen. Again, it may have happened. It certainly happened to some of you. You know, you've lost family members. You've lost maybe relationships. You've lost jobs. You've lost possessions, perhaps, and maybe you've had to lose a lot of time. Just because you're a Christian and because people are persecuting you. Sometimes they're not too open about it, but it happens. And you don't know what people are saying behind your back. I found out a little of that when some of my best friends and my wife left the church. And people we knew who were very supportive of us said, well, we always thought you were a little weird, where they could speak more openly to her than they would have to me. And so I didn't know that was going on, but it happens. So you never know who probably doesn't like you because you're a Christian and because of what you do and how you live. Acts 14 and verse 22, Acts 14, 22, confirming the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith that we must, through much tribulation, enter into the kingdom of God. So as Christians, that's part of our, I guess you might call it our job description. In the Army, we call it our MOS, our military occupational specialty. And we have little badges on our uniforms that after a while told us what our MOS was, a little thing. I was in military police, so I had little cross pistols. If you were in the infantry, I mean, if you're a really tough guy, you had crossed rifles. They had cross cannons for guys who were in the artillery, et cetera, and then we had various color scarves. So we have, I don't know what color our scarves are or what our badge is. Well, our badge is love. You know, one of the badges that we wear. And I had my badge when I was discharged after 3 years. I had an eagle. Well, that can be a colonel. I wasn't a colonel. I was a specialist. I wore it on my sleeve, not on my collar. So I had a badge. But we all had those badges. We have badges today. And part of the qualification for what we do is tribulation. You follow Jesus Christ, you become a Christian, you're going to have tribulation. You're going to have problems. So that's the first part of the stepping stones to hope. The first is tribulation, pressure. You know, pressure. The other is patience. Patience is waiting without worrying. You know, sometimes it's easy to wait for things sometimes. I guess if it's something you're really looking forward to, it's difficult. And we worry about things. We worry about, you know, things that require our patience. I know some of you are too young to have children, but if you have children, you always, I did, my wife did, we worried about our kids. Were they going to turn out all right? I probably told you this. We had a daughter who, I don't know, had some friends we didn't like and did some things we didn't approve of, and she was always willing to admit it, mainly to my wife, because she thought I was kind of an ogre and might be a little tough on her, but she would tell my wife about these things, and my wife would not approve of it, and she'd say, well, I know you don't approve of it, Mom, but I just thought I'd share that with you, and do it very sweetly to where my wife would have a hard time dealing with that. Or would not have a real job of salesmanship by my daughter, and we at one time discussed running away from home as parents, coming back in 10 years, 20 years, and thinking, well, they'll work it out. They'll survive, maybe. And looking back now, yes, they did. You know, my daughter was a problem in high school. We worried about her. She always got good grades, and she hung around with a pretty high-class bunch of kids. They all got good grades. They were from nice neighborhoods, nicer than ours, but the one thing is, they were smart. They wouldn't get into normal trouble. They'd get into really exotic trouble, you know, big trouble. So we dealt with that. So we had to have patience. We couldn't worry. We were waiting. You know, she used to go to school with that Ryan Ott kid, and we weren't too sure about him either. He seemed to be, we didn't know him well enough to know that he might have had problems. But his mom and dad probably worried about him. We worry about our kids. I worried about my son. My other daughter was fine all the way through high school. Then she got into college. She had a boyfriend we didn't approve of. And then she went off the tracks for a while. I mean, not seriously off the tracks. She got through college, got her bachelor's degree in 6 years, which I thought it took 4 years. Normally it does, but she kept changing her major. She started off as a theater major, which I thought, okay, you're in a sort of an entertainment-oriented area. You can learn a lot of things about staging and lighting and all the technical aspects. She said, no, I just want to be a dancer. What? you're going to college to become a dancer? And I guess I intimidated her enough, or maybe she tried it and found out she was good at it, but not good enough to make a living at it, and changed her major and then changed her major again. So now she has a degree in psychology and has a fairly substantial job as a result. But we worried about it. We needed to have patience. Now looking back, it's pretty good. Of course, that's getting to my next point. But that's patience. Waiting without worrying. Luke 21. And I know you all have stories like that that you can tell, but I'm the one telling stories today. But we could share a lot of, particularly the people who are my age and have raised children, like Ryan Ott, successfully. You know, we can go back and see where we needed patience and where we, well, we all need it today in one sense or another. Luke 21, and I guess we'll begin in verse 16, some other encouraging prospects here. You shall be betrayed both by parents and by brethren, by kinsfolk and friends, you know, people you trust, some of whom shall cause you to be put to death. This is talking to the disciples, but by extension, it applies to us today. Now, we may not go through that, but as one minister said, we will all be martyred. Maybe not physically, but we will have that mindset where we're willing to be martyred. And we'll go through that in our mind, and where we will determine that that's something that may happen to us. And you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but not a hair on your head shall perish. In your patience possess you your souls. Patience is going to save us, not physically maybe, and maybe it will, but in some cases spiritually, in every case spiritually, our patience is going to save us. Our survival spiritually and to some degree physically depends on our patience. You know, waiting without worrying, knowing that, sure enough, everything's going to turn out all right. I think there's Murphy's Law or some law like that. I know there are several Murphy's Laws, but one is, don't worry, nothing's ever going to turn out all right. Maybe you've heard that. Some people live their lives that way. I think that's sad. We can live our lives as Christians knowing that no matter what happens in the meantime, everything's going to turn out all right. Call it rose-colored glasses, but I had a pair of those one time. My wife accused me of wearing them too often sometimes, we should wear rose-colored glasses. As Mr. Armstrong used to say, I've read the end of the book and we win. God wins, you know, and if we're with God, we're going to win. So hopefully that, we will, in our patience, possess our souls. We will be saved in part because of our patience and, of course, overall, because of the grace of God. Romans 15 and verse 4. For whosoever, whatsoever things are written aforehand are written for our learning, that we may, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. Now the God of patience and consolation grant you to be like-minded one toward another, according to Jesus Christ. We need to learn through patience. It teaches us. Patience and comfort of the Scriptures. You know, we can read God's Word. We get a lot of encouragement there, particularly in difficult times. I know my mother, who was not a big Bible scholar or even Bible reader, but she sort of liked, if we were having problems and I found her Bible open, it was usually open to the 23rd Psalm. Which, you know, most of us maybe as kids learned to recite, but if you look at that and just take it line by line and word by word, that gives us a whole lot of courage, I should think, knowing that we are in God's care. He's not going to lose us. So hopefully we can take consolation and comfort from the Scriptures and have hope, you know, and through patience. Matthew 24... You know, I think there's an old saying, I want patience and I want it right now. Well, that's not the way it always happens. Matthew 24 and verse 42, Watch therefore, you don't know what hour your Lord doth come. And we all look forward to God's kingdom. And in the past, sometimes we've set dates. We've thought, well, Jesus Christ is going to return in whatever year. You know, I know that part of the prevailing thought back in the 60s was it would be 1973. Or something would happen. We would go to a place of safety. And I remember I made the move out here in 1972. I thought, well, I'll get to involve a few months, enjoy a few months of good living in the Ozarks before we're all whisked away. Well, that didn't happen. But know this, that if the good men of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be you also ready, for in such an hour as you think not. You want to know when Christ is going to return? When we don't think he's going to return. The Son of Man cometh. God does not work on our timetable. I know there are people who I've known in the church who years ago lost patience. They thought, well, God promised he'd bless me, and he hasn't yet. You know, I'm still driving the same old car. Still living in the same old house. I thought I was going to be rich because I tithe. Well, riches isn't always physical, but they lost patience. I don't see them sitting here. There's a lot of people I don't see, or more people I don't see sitting here that I've known in the past than I do see sitting here. So some people have lost patience and just gone away and given up because their timetable didn't agree with God's timetable. Well, we have to submit to God's timetable, even though it may not be our timetable. For who is that faithful, wise servant whom the Lord hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom when his Lord cometh shall find so doing. Again, I've said this before, we need to be so doing when Jesus Christ returns. So it wasn't 1975 or whatever. And I remember other people made bizarre predictions back then saying, you know, we might have to wait until 1982. Well, we did. And I thought of the age of the turn of the new millennium in the year 2000. And I thought, boy, I'm going to really be old then. And I could just picture myself sort of fading away into history or into wherever. And looking into the new millennium and thinking, well, I guess I'm not going to see much of this. I'm pretty much through. I'm going to be 59 years old. And that was quite a few years ago. It was 11 years ago. And again, we need patience. We need to realize that God does not work on our timetable. Just Google William Miller sometime, a preacher in, I think, upstate New York or New England, who predicted God would return, Jesus would return in 1834. And they had a humongous number of followers who sold their homes. Some of them went up to a hill, and he predicted the exact date. Well, God's timetable was not William Miller's timetable either. Micah 7 and verse 7. Micah 7, 7. Here's where I have to find it in the Minor Prophets. Ah, found it. There are little tricks. I'm glad I learned that one a couple of weeks ago about hises or whatever it is. So I now can find Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, and Zechariah. I hope I've got them in the right order, but it's H-Z-H-Z. So, but Micah is not included in that. Micah 7 and verse 7, therefore I will look unto the Lord and will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. We have to wait. It's not going to happen when we think it's going to happen. In fact, it says it's going to happen when we don't think it's going to happen. We can't just figure it all out mathematically. I know there are some theories. I know it used to be said, nobody's met my challenge yet, that, of course, history is like a week. It's 6 years of man's rule followed by 6,000 years of man's rule followed by 1,000 years of Christ's rule. Well, that's nice. But some people take that very literally, and we know that after, you know, 6,000 years of mankind's history, Christ is going to return, so we can just figure that out. Well, I don't know that that's in Scripture. I know that's a theory and probably a fairly sound one based on just looking at the week looking at the symbolism of a week versus 7,000 years, and perhaps that's right, but we just can't figure it out to the day, the minute, or even the year. And we've proved that again and again. Matthew 24 and verse 13. Matthew 24 and verse 13. He that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. Whenever that end is, we need to be looking forward to it. We need to endure to the end. We need to hang in there until the very end. So that's patience. We need patience added to our tribulation. Tribulation, we're having problems. We need to have patience. Put up with them a little bit longer. Put up with them for we don't know how long. You know, I didn't think I'd be here now. I thought I'd be a spirit being by now. But we're having to have patience. Another stepping stone to hope is experience. The word there in Greek is also translated proof or trial or experiment. The Greek word proving trial, approved, tried character. That's what experience is. We have a problem. We have patience in dealing with it. We then have an experience we can look back on, or experience in the largest sense, to see, well, what has happened. And again, I think if you look back at your own life, and I can look back at my own life, and I can see where some things that maybe didn't make sense back then all of a sudden do. And we all can do that, I think, because we now have experience. The older we get, see, that puts people like me and Mr. Esslinger at an advantage, perhaps. And Mrs. Esslinger, I think she's older than I am, but not by much. That puts us at an advantage because we can look back at those experiences. And through patience, we put up with things. And here we are. And we can look back and see where God has worked in our lives to our ultimate advantage and take courage from that. 1 Peter 1 and verse 7. 1 Peter 1 and verse 7. I think we went over this or maybe skipped across it in Bible study in recent months. 1 Peter 1:7, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. Those trials we're experiencing are just proofs, and they're of great value. They're precious. Do we ever think of our trials as precious? More precious than gold? You know, I mean, what's gold going to get you? Let's say you have a bunch of gold. Eventually, if you live long enough, I guess you could spend it all. But our faith, the trial of our faith, the successful dealing with problems that we have is more precious than gold. Trials show who we really are. Trials show who we really are, what we're made of. And I wonder about that sometimes, and we possibly, hopefully all do. We all look at ourselves and say, well, how would we react to a certain circumstance? How would we react to standing before a firing squad, to being tortured, to being told, well, you need to give this up, to being threatened with our job unless you show up this Friday night for work? How would we react? Some of us have had to react to that. Some of us have had to give up jobs because of that. Some of us have not. I remember when I wasn't even in the church yet. I was just listening to the World Tomorrow broadcast, reading the Plain Truth, became convinced that I should keep the Sabbath. And then one day we moved to New York from Massachusetts, and we stayed with my parents for a while, which my dad wasn't really thrilled with. I mean, he welcomed us, but he didn't want us to take up permanent residence in their house. And he found out that I was trying to keep the Sabbath. And he said, you know, you're looking for a job in a field where you have no experience, broadcasting. You couldn't even get a job at Eastman Kodak. You all remember Eastman Kodak? That was the big industry in our town. I say was because it's not that big anymore and is imperiled and has filed for bankruptcy and everything else. But it was a very secure company, and basically in our city, if you wanted a secure job, you went to work for Eastman Kodak, and no matter what level of skill you had, if you could find a place there, you had it made, because George Eastman had a tremendous influence and a tremendous generosity in dealing with his people. And people who worked for Eastman Kodak, which was not many members of my family, but my wife's family, were basically her dad and her two brothers were Eastman Kodak people. And whatever salary you made, George Eastman would give his employees, or the company would give those employees, a bonus equal to about 30% of their annual salary every year. So that was something everybody looked forward to up there. But he said you couldn't even get a job at Kodak if you won't work on Friday night or Saturday. And here you're looking for a job in a new industry that you have no experience and very little talent in. So I went on from there, and I got a job. And the program director, who was my immediate supervisor, called me in one day, I think the first day, he said, I've got to explain something to you. He says, you are the new guy here. You've got to work when other people don't want to. We're a 7-day-a-week operation. And he was a little apologetic, sort of trembly old man. He was 34, I think. Hey, I was 21, 22. He was an old man to me. And said, but you're going to have to work Sundays. He said, we'll give you Saturdays off, but you're going to have to work Sundays. I said, well, that's all right with me. Whew. Dodge the bullet. But that's not true for everybody. You know, I had a good experience there. Later, I went to another job, which was my dream job, and a new owner took over a radio station I was working with and decided that on the following Sunday they were going to start broadcasting country music, which was something I loved. And this was one of the first stations in New York State that ever did that. I was thrilled. But I realized that he had just fired the program director on a Sunday because he couldn't get a hold of him. He says, I want people I can count on 7 days a week. I thought, well, wait till Friday comes along. And Friday came along, and I told my immediate supervisor, I said, you know I'm not going to be here tomorrow or tonight. I'll call in tomorrow evening, and, you know, I'll come in tomorrow evening if I'm still working here. And I called in, and my supervisor, he was a news director, he said, come on in. Mr. Maltz, who was the president of the company, he wants to see you. And I thought, okay. So I came in, I was sitting at my desk, and he walked by the door and sort of, he stopped. He saw me there. He said, Hurwitz, I want to talk to you about something. And he was Jewish, and he wasn't keeping the Sabbath. And he says, I want you to know something, Hurwitz. As long as you're working for me, you never have to worry about working Saturdays. Dodged another bullet. And the guy that he fired for not being available on Sunday, eventually, a couple years later, I got that job. So I've had good experiences. So I can look at those, but I know some have had other experiences. Some have lost jobs. Some have lost really good jobs. But usually, I find they get better jobs and end up in a much better situation. So trial shows what we're really made of. And again, I guess... In this case, I didn't have to give anything up, but I was willing to. I mean, there was no question about whether or not I would work on Saturday or Friday night. But God saw me through, and God blessed me in that. Isaiah 66, verse 10. Rejoice with Jerusalem, and be glad with her, and love her, and rejoice with her. I've got the wrong place here. Isaiah 66. Psalm 66, okay, I saw that SA and thought it was Isaiah. Psalm 66 is what I'm looking for. Somebody calling and asking if there's going to be a dance here tonight. Isaiah 66 and verse 10. Thy congregation hath dwelt therein, thou, O Lord, hast prepared for them. I'm still in the wrong place here. Let's see, that's 68. I'm getting old. Yeah, my glasses adjusted or something. Here we go. For thou, O God, hast proved us. Thou hast tried us as silver is tried. God is refining us through every trial, through every experience. Hopefully he's making us a better person, a stronger Christian, a better candidate to be his eternal servant. Genesis 22, we can look here at the example of Abraham, Genesis 22. I don't think I have to rehearse the whole story because we're all familiar with it. This is where he was asked to sacrifice Isaac. You know, here's this 100-year-old man who's promised a son who would carry on and become the father of many nations. What a promise. He's 100 years old. His wife was 90. How are they going to have kids at that age? And, of course, they tried the thing with Hagar, which was not pleasing to God, and which set off an international circumstance, which continues to this day. But so he's got his son Isaac. I'm soon to have a step or a grandson-in-law named Isaac as well. But I'm sure he was, well, I'm pretty thrilled with that, but he was probably thrilled beyond words with his son Isaac. And he was asked to sacrifice him without hesitation. Started off, got up there, got ready to make the sacrifice, and God intervened at the last second, just about. And we read in verse 12, after all that, he said, "Lay not your hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not, you haven't withheld your son, your only son, from me." So God was proving Abraham. He was refining Abraham. He was seeing, would Abraham really do this if I asked him to? And I'm sure there was just undeniable proof in Abraham's mind that this was God he was being directed by, and that this was something he was told by God to do. I know there are a lot of misguided people who kind of have visions like that and sacrifice their children, and that's not commonplace, but every once in a while we'll hear something gross on the news about that. But in this case, it was God, and Abraham was obedient to God, knowing it was God's will, and then as a result, he proved himself to God. And look at what a blessing look at what a blessing we have as a result down through the ages. But that's where it started. He proved himself to God. God got to know Abraham a little better through that process and that situation. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 9. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 9. "For to this end also did I write, that I might know the proof of you, whether you be obedient in all things." Does God know that we would be obedient in all things? Does God know the proof of us through the tribulations that we suffer, through the patience that we show, through the experience that we have developed? And again, I don't care how old you are. I've talked to several people about this congregation this week, personally and on the phone. People have asked me, well, what's the church like there? And I'm delighted to say that we have a very solid congregation, and I feel really good about that. Some of you have just proven yourselves and do that probably every day and every week. And if it's not something I see or someone else sees, maybe it's in your mind. Maybe it's in your dedication. Maybe it's something you see in Scripture that maybe you don't like. Oh, I'm supposed to do that? Or, oh, yeah, that's my attitude, and that's a wrong attitude, and I'm going to fix that. And, of course, we're going up to the Passover season, and we'll have the opportunity to keep the Passover, and prior to that, to hopefully examine ourselves and determine what kind of person we are and how much progress we may have made in the past year. And in our humility, sometimes we just, we don't brag about it, and we probably see ourselves in too negative a light, but hopefully not in a shiny positive light where we see no problems. But hopefully we do see some progress, and in humility can look back and see that. So those three things, tribulation, patience, and hope, experience, result in hope. What about hope? Well, it assures our spiritual safety. It assures our spiritual safety. Psalm 16 and verse 9. And again, every day, hopefully, we gain a little more hope by our tribulations, our patience, and our experience. Psalm 16 and verse 9, "Therefore my heart is glad, my glory rejoices, my flesh also shall rest in hope," or dwell confidently in hope. Do we have that confidence, not in our own ability, but in God's grace and the way he's dealing with us, to know that we have hope, that everything's going to turn out all right? It also gives us courage. Psalm 31 and verse 23. Psalm 31 and verse 23. Oh, love the Lord, all his saints, for the Lord preserves the faithful and plentifully rewardeth the proud doer. Be of good courage. He shall strengthen your heart, all you that have hope in the Lord. And again, that hope strengthens us. It gives us courage. You know, it helps us to do things that are right, even when they're difficult. God gives us, hope gives us undying optimism. Psalm 42. Psalm 42, verse 5. Why art thou cast down, O my soul, and why art thou disquieted in me? Hope thou in God, for he shall yet praise him for help, the help of his countenance. God is going to help us. God is going to give us that hope, going to give us that undying optimism. You know, sometimes we're looked at as kind of negative because, you know, we know this society is coming to an end, and it is. We know that things are, for a while, going to get worse, much worse, beyond anything that we've seen down through history. And yet God should give us the undying optimism to know that, yes, eventually everything is going to turn out all right, not only for us, but also for people we love who aren't in the church. You know, people who are in our families, people we work with, whatever. Sometimes people who aren't very nice. But we should have that undying optimism. Above all people on the face of the earth, we ought to be the ones with the, you know, not in a naive way, but we should be the ones wearing the rose-colored glasses. I'd let you borrow mine, but I lost them. Well, some country music artist had a song back in the 70s called Rose Colored Glasses, and as a promotion, he sent out rose colored glasses to everybody and a lot of radio people, and I got some, but I lost them. I guess I'll have to get some more. My wife claims that I still have them sometimes. So God gives us that optimism. Hope does. Hope also gives us spiritual stability. Spiritual stability. Turn to Proverbs 10 and verse 25. Proverbs 10:25. As a whirlwind passeth, so the wicked are no more, but the righteous have an everlasting foundation. Do we have a solid foundation that's going to keep us where we are, where we need to be, no matter what whirlwind comes by, no matter what tries to blow us away or carry us away or distract us or take us away from what we need to be thinking and doing? Hebrews 6 and verse 19. Hebrews 6, 19. Which hope we have as an anchor to our soul, an anchor, doth both sure and steadfast, which enters into all into that within the veil. But we have hope. We have an anchor for our soul. Again, something that keeps us stable. And it also helps us to face death, because we're all going to die. Proverbs 14 and verse 32. Proverbs 14 and verse 32. We're all going to, if only in the twinkling of an eye, we're all going to suffer physical death. 14:32. The wicked is driven away in his wickedness. The righteous has hope in his death. You know, when we die, it's really, as it says in 1 Corinthians 15, the resurrection chapter, it's a victory. It's a victory when we die having lived a good life, having lived a life that is approved of by God, that's inspired by God. 1 Corinthians 15:54, we'll turn there. 1 Corinthians 15:54. O death, where is your sting? O grave, where is your victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But basically here, I didn't start in verse 54 where I said I was. So corruptible shall put on incorruption, the mortal shall put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. And then, again, death, where is your sting? Grave, where is your victory? A great victory. Also, hope gives us confidence in God's power. Confidence in God's power. Romans 15 and verse 4. Romans 15 and verse 4. And I talked to one person recently who didn't feel very confident in their salvation and actually said, well, maybe I need to be baptized again because I don't think I'm making it. Well, this person I think suffered from some lack of self-esteem, but I said, well, God chose you. God called you. You have been baptized. You've accepted that. You've had hands laid on you. You've had God's Spirit given to you. And I suggested some things that might be done to sort of buoy up his confidence and his contact with God, including maybe you ought to fast for a day and pray about this. So God, we should have confidence. My bottom line was, God has done all this in your life. God doesn't make mistakes. And I said, well, I think what you're telling me is maybe you think God made a mistake in calling you. No, God doesn't make mistakes. So do we have that confidence? Do we know that God doesn't make mistakes? In Romans 15 and verse 4, for whatsoever things are written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. Again, I read that earlier, but read it again. And verse 13, now the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, that you may abound in hope through the power of the Holy Spirit, through God's Spirit. Pray for that. Every once in a while, I just have to get down and pray, God, give me faith. One of the fruits of your Spirit. Let me see the end from the beginning here and realize what you're doing and what you're going to do and have great faith in that, not because I can reason it all out, but through your Spirit, give me that extra power. Well, brethren, we all have trials. We've all probably had trials this week. I'll guarantee you almost, unless you live in a bubble somewhere, you'll probably have trials next week and the week after and for the rest of your life every week that you'll have to deal with, whether it's internal or whether it's with other people or whatever circumstances. We all have trials. When we have trials, we need to have patience. When we have patience, we'll grow from that experience and ultimately enjoy God's gift of hope.